Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining me on the program right now, he is the college basketball editor for SB Nation. You can find him on Twitter at Card Chronicle. Mike Rutherford joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Mike, I appreciate you making time, especially while all these games are going on. How are you tonight?
No problem. I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you on, man. So let's start there. UMBC playing right now, but of course their game on Friday is what had the world talking. A 16 knocking off a 1. What needs to happen for Tony Bennett to have this not be the first thing that comes up when people discuss or think about him?
He's got to win like 15 national championships in a row, probably. Like that's. I mean, at this point, even if they won the national title next year, which is, I mean, it's feasible. They're going to bring back the key parts from this year's team. You don't think DeAndre Hunter is going to leave. But even if they won the national title next year, I feel like he's still going to be more synonymous with what happened a couple of nights ago than he would be with being a coach who cut down the nets. I mean, this is historic. I mean, how many years have we all had the rhetorical question, you know, is this the year? Can a 16 ever beat a 1? Is this ever going to happen? We all knew, you know, the stats by heart. It was the one thing that I think even casual college basketball fans knew about the tournament. 16s don't beat 1s. It's never happened. For that to happen to the number one overall seed and for it to go down in the manner in which it went down, which was just a straight tail whipping, where it was really never even close in the second half. They never made a charge. It has done, I think, irreparable damage to Tony Bennett's reputation. And, you know, it was already, he probably already had a damaged reputation heading into this NCAA tournament. So this was just piling on. But yeah, I mean, that's my answer. He's going to have to do something remarkable in the rest of his career for this not to be the first thing that people think of when they hear his name.
Do you feel like stylistically, stylistically, UVA plays a brand of basketball that inherently it fosters close games, even against teams that they're much more talented than? In some ways, is this the style of, if we were going to see a 16 seed beat a 1, it seems like this might be the type of team that it would happen against just stylistically. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're right, because, you know, when you limit possessions, it obviously creates a smaller margin for error for the better team. It also allows Virginia to maybe play with some teams that have more natural talent. I mean, I think of the game against Duke, where they went to Cameron Indoor, took on a team that was at the time ranked as the number one offensive team in the country, and beat them 65-63 in a fantastic game. If they played more up and down, if they took more chances offensively, if they didn't, you know, make such a concerted effort to cut off transition points, maybe they don't win that game, but maybe they take care of a team like UMBC. I think that, like, the style argument, it made more sense when we were talking about why is Virginia losing to teams like Michigan State and Syracuse and Florida last year. The UMBC thing, it just makes zero sense on any level, because they didn't even do what they do well against a team that had a KenPom ranking of 188 coming into this game, a team that had lost to Albany a month and a half ago, 83-39. For them to not hold that UMBC team to any fewer than 74 points just boggles the mind. I mean, think about this. Virginia was the only team in the country heading into that game on Friday night that hadn't allowed a single opponent to score 70 points in the game. UMBC cracked 74. They held, I think, 16 opponents to under 53 points, and that's over 32 games. UMBC scores 53 in the second half. I mean, nothing about that game was anything short of just remarkable. And I think it's a game that was so ridiculous that it's going to stand up and still look ridiculous 50 years from now.
Yeah, and here we are, and I'm talking to Mike Rutherford, the college basketball editor for SB Nation. Wouldn't you know, like, all of the stories that have to do with upsets and Cinderellas seem to have consolidated themselves in the South region. And that, I mean, it looks like a bomb went off on the bracket over there, Mike, when you look at Buffalo beating Arizona and Loyola into the Sweet 16. We're coming into the waning moments here with Nevada hanging in with Cincinnati. I guess your assessment of that, like, could John Calipari get to another Final Four just through attrition almost?
No, I think he's going to. I mean, I think when you look at that bracket, when you look at the way Kentucky's playing, when you look at, I mean, how they took care of business against inferior but dangerous opponents in Davidson and Buffalo, they look like, without question, the strongest team in this region, and that's even if Cincinnati survives this this collapse that they're going through right now against Nevada. I mean, when you look at what Arizona did against Buffalo, and to be fair, like the Virginia loss to UMBC is the best win Sean Miller's had in forever. I mean, I think it was bigger for him than the Pac-12 tournament championship or the Pac-12 regular season title, because now nobody's talking about him and just the this ridiculousness that Arizona's about to walk in for the foreseeable future. But that bracket, I mean, Loyola Chicago, they can beat Cincinnati if they win this game. They can beat Nevada if they win this game. I'm not sure they can beat Kentucky the way they're playing, because, you know, UK is doing what Kentucky teams under John Calipari have historically done, which is take all that talent that just kind of plods along through January and February and turn it into something that, out of seemingly nowhere, is great in March. And they certainly seem to be hitting their stride at the perfect time.
Mike Rutherford joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Mike, it looks like most of the upsets and the Cinderellas have kind of consolidated themselves in one region. Syracuse is through as an 11, but I almost don't look at them as a Cinderella with the way Boeheim coaches this time of year in that 2-3 matchup zone. Of the top seeds that are still left, which one in your mind is most insulated from having a Virginia-type moment the rest of the way?
Yeah, I'd like to say Duke, but their offense has been, or their defense, I should say, has been, you know, hit or miss throughout the season. Now they've been a lot better since they went to zone, but I feel like Villanova is still the best overall team in this field, and I guess that they're not, you know, insulated, as you say, from a upset because they take so many outside shots, and eventually, when you're dealing with college kids who aren't the Golden State Warriors, that's a system that can sometimes fail you. They're not going to hit 17 every game like they did against Alabama. But I still think this Villanova team, they're more complete than they've been the last few years, with the exception of the national championship team. They're definitely more complete than they were a year ago because they've got legitimate inside post play. Amari Spellman, who was sitting out last year, is a fantastic inside-outside guy. They've got a number, like Mikal Bridges is very, very versatile, and he's finally realizing his NBA potential. I don't think they can get beat in a manner like they got beat by Wisconsin last year, where Wisconsin just kind of dirties up the game and is the more physical team and scores more points in the paint and kills them on the glass. I don't think you can beat Villanova that way this year, and that's bad news for West Virginia because that's kind of what they're going to try to do if they do wind up playing in the Sweet 16. But I still feel like Villanova is the strongest overall team and the least likely of the one seeds remaining to get knocked off.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Mike Rutherford of SB Nation joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Mike, of the Sweet 16 matchups that are locked in, I know not all of them are because we've got a few games going on tonight, but even projecting ahead, like, you know, for example, if you think Xavier is going to take care of Florida State tonight, we can slot them in. Either potential Sweet 16 or locked in Sweet 16 matchups, of all of them so far that are on the schedule or potentially on the schedule, which one are you most looking forward to?
Well, I was really excited about Michigan-North Carolina because all the storylines and, you know, people were going to go back to the 93 game and all that stuff, and it was going to be a lot of fun. Now Michigan-Texas A&M is kind of fascinating because Michigan's maybe playing the best basketball of any team in the country, and A&M's a team that has had a top 10 roster for the entire season and is just now finally realizing that. But I would still point to Gonzaga Xavier, and this is assuming Xavier gets by Florida State tonight, because I think it's such a strange role reversal where Gonzaga, this team that before last year just was surrounded by the stigma of, yeah, they've got great record. Yeah, the media loves them. Yeah, college basketball diehards love them, but they always choke in the NCAA tournament. Not only was that sort of wiped away by their run to the national championship game last year, but we're seeing sort of a reverse effect this year where now everybody thinks they're going to beat Xavier. And, you know, they're sort of the public favorite to reach at least the Elite Eight and potentially crack through and go to a Final Four. And, you know, Xavier sort of is in the role Gonzaga was last year, where they've got this ridiculous resume. They have no reason for anybody to doubt them, and yet people still are, just because they haven't made a Final Four yet and because they don't have the name brand recognition that some of these other teams that are still playing have. I think that makes it sort of a, you know, king of the mid-majors who don't want you to call them mid-majors, or king of the former mid-majors, we'll call it, matchup in the Sweet 16.
I think it's interesting, you know, you just said, and I agree with you, I have Michigan in my Final Four, so I agree with you as to how they're playing right now. I think John Beilein's one of the best coaches in the country. But I think it's interesting where we sit here, you and I both, like, hey, they're playing some of the best basketball in the country, and yet they needed one of the all-time finishes in a game in NCAA history to get past the University of Houston, right? You know, like, if that shot doesn't go in last night, they're just another team that loses in the round of 32. That's the degree of randomness that we're dealing with in a tournament like this.
No, it's so true, and you know, John Beilein gets all this credit, and I give him some. I mean, I think Beilein is one of the top five coaches in the country.
Yeah.
But it's not like he hit the shot last night. You know, it's not right. Like you know, he was Jordan Poole out there. If Poole misses that by 30 feet, nobody's saying, what a great call by John Beilein. The guy's just got the chops. He's a great March coach. Everybody's saying, you know, shouldn't he have drawn something else up? Shouldn't he have gotten the ball to Mo Wagner? Shouldn't he have let Muhammad Ali, Abdul Rahman take the shot or something like that? It is crazy how thin the margin of between genius and moron is, especially this time of year.
Well, and along those lines, and I live in Houston, Kelvin Sampson's catching a lot of heat for not guarding the inbounder. And Brad Nessler even pointed it out on the broadcast last night in the moment as the ball was being inbounded. Did that surprise you that U of H didn't take one of their bigger guys and guard the inbounds pass?
It did, just because the extra guy, and I think it was Rob Gray, who was sort of playing safety at midcourt, he didn't really do anything. He was just kind of standing there. If you're not going to put a guy on the ball, then, you know, make sure that you've got that extra man doing something productive. But at the same time, you watch the Purdue-Butler game today. In the final seconds, they put Harms on the guy with the ball, and this is a 7'3" center. And Butler still got a really clean look at a potential game-tying shot. I don't think Kamar Baldwin got the shot off in time, but you know, had he, it would have been something that people would have ripped Matt Painter for. There's no right way to do it. I think the safe play is always to put a guy on the ball, just because if a guy hits a ridiculous shot on the other team, you know you're going to get panned for it after 1992. You know it's going to come up. There's, you know, why even put yourself in that position as a head coach? Even if you think it's the wrong move, just do it to avoid the criticism.
That's right. Christian Laettner ruined it for everybody. It's good stuff. Yep, no question. Mike Rutherford, SB Nation college basketball editor. Hey, Mike, I enjoyed that conversation. Go enjoy the games. I appreciate you making some time for me.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.